I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. I've been into the new Night Court because I like those old shows. John Larroquette is in the show, and he's a real-life alcoholic. And early on last season, the new judge, Abby Stone, talked about her character defects, and he put two and two together that she had alcoholism, and she had been working on trying to fix those character defects. That was the theme of the show and why she went back to take over the court that her father had, to feel closer to him. Character defects are something we always talk about in recovery. And I thought that would be an awesome topic tonight that we could share a little bit. And as we were talking off the air, Steve, you talked about your character defects coming up.
Right.
What do you want to share?
Yeah, you know, something, it's something, it was interesting. How you doing, Matt? It's great to be with you, first of all. And I know you like that show, and I actually saw an ad come on for it, and I'm like, I should probably watch this show. And it's interesting that you brought that up, because I didn't know anything about that. But, you know, we do talk about character defects, and in the 12-step program, in our program of AA, you know, one of the things we do a fourth step, which is to go through a lot of your issues and a lot of harms you caused others and fears and stuff like that. And the purpose of that step, and usually you do it with the sponsor so that you can get some help on it in case you can't see it yourself. But the purpose of that step is to try to weed out or flush out the character defects, right? The things that we have, whether it's fear, dishonesty, jealousy, whatever they might be, that causes you to have problems with relationships and things in your life that ultimately, I think when we looked back on it, when I looked back on it, were the reasons why I drank, right? I mean, we talk about it all the time. I thought drinking was my problem. And the truth is I was trying to use drinking as my solution. And, you know, we won't get it all. But I, you know, one of the things that I struggled with back in the day, and not even to this day, first of all, I was thinking about this today. And I would share, especially at my Friday night meeting, I would always share, like, I'm a transactional person. I always was. I used to say it in a past tense, and I realized that that's not true. I'm still to this day a transactional person.
Tell me more about that.
I'm always thinking, like, what's on the other end of this thing? Like, if you know, and it's not always. I shouldn't say it's always, but a lot of it is, you know, what am I doing or like what's in it for me? There's always a little bit about what's in it for me or I've done this, so I deserve that. Like there's always that type of deal for me. When I was really active and before, and again, it's not as bad as it used to be. And that's not what I'm going to tell a story about, but it sort of just shows you that I have to be careful with that because I can get into that situation where I start doing everything that's transactional and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to expect something back. So what happens in that situation is that if I am transactional and I expect something back from something, number one, I have a motive there, but the problem becomes if I don't get what I'm expecting back, then what happens, right? What happens? You get resentments, you get upset, you get angry. So, you know, it's really it, but that's not what I want to tell. I want to tell a little story. I was out. So this happened just before New Year's, and I was down at the Stop and Shop here locally, local grocery store, and all of a sudden on the intercom, I hear them saying, you know, they're reading off anybody owner of a gray Camry, my license plate, come to the courtesy desk. And I go to the courtesy desk and finally get one of the people. I'm like, hey, that was my car you called about. And then they go, oh, here's this woman wants to talk to you. And there was a little old lady there, and she says, I just want to let you know I just clipped your car in the parking lot. Very nice of her, right? And she's like, do you want to step outside, take a look at it? I'm like, sure. So I go outside, and we look at it, and she had scraped my bumper. You know, it wasn't horrible, but she really, you know, scraped my bumper pretty bad, and then came across the back fender a little bit and scraped that. And here's the problem. That fender was already dented. And I immediately looked at that as an opportunity to get that fender fixed on her dime. Right? Because she thought, she did it. And my first thought was, so, and now it would be something if it was a fleeting thought and I went, no, that, but it wasn't like it, like, you know, we talked about it, we exchanged information. And as soon as I did that and we walked away from each other, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Right? Like,
yeah.
Like, what are you doing here? Like, you're not going to, I like right away, I'm like, I'm not going to make her fix that. It wasn't hers, you know? So I was like, so right there, right? So two things I have to do. Number one is I have to fix it. I have to fess up to it. And number two, I have to sort of call myself out on it, right? So, and it took me a while. And there was a lot of things happening at that point. So first of all, it wasn't enough damage. And we talked about it in a suite. I'm like, hey, listen, it was right before the holidays. Like, I'm not doing anything until after the holidays. I'll give you a call. And then we had a thing where my daughter-in-law's mom died, and we were, you know, so there was a lot of stuff going on. So this whole thing happened, and I didn't do anything about it for a good 7 to 10 days, right? Like, it was hanging out there. And here's the problem with that character defects for me. It's hanging out there, and it's eating at me, right? It's eating at me because I did that. So I finally went to Friday night meeting last week. And I'm like, man, I don't want to share this in front of a group of guys. Like, I don't want to share that. You know, I mean, I've got some sobriety. I work a decent program. But, you know, one of the things I've learned is that I have to talk about it. And I thought, yeah, it's probably a good subject to bring up tonight to say that even somebody who has a decent amount of sobriety, you know, you have to watch those things. And of course, not this doesn't affect everybody. But it certainly is me. But it also shows me why this is a lifetime program for me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because this is the things that happen. It sort of creeps in if I'm not paying attention to it. And the truth is, if I didn't have this program in the past, and this is what I mean with some of my character defects, the transactionality and all this kind of stuff, like, I would have absolutely gone through with it, right? There was no question in my mind. In the past, I would have gone through. I would have brought it down. I would have had this woman and her or insurance pay for the whole thing. Like, that is exactly what I would have done. And that's not who I am today, right? I mean, I've done enough work in this program, and that's not who I am. And I don't want to do that. So I guess I want to talk about that. That's like what we always talk about, like, why do we continue to go to meetings? Why do we continue to do work? Well, for me, and for anybody who's listening to this, who may be new or maybe the, like, that's why we do it, right? I mean, I knew right away that I had done wrong, you know? And there's a lot of things I could have done to take care of it a lot quicker. One of the other failures, right, was that I sat on it too long. And, I'm making some excuses. Mm-hmm. We did. There were some things that were going on. But there were some things I could have done right away. And the truth is, it's all worked out, right? I did it. We've done it. I'm going to get it fixed. Like, I went down. I had it checked out. Told the guy, she's not responsible for anything. She knows she's responsible for repainting my bumper, basically, is what she's responsible for. You know, but he's going to fix the dent, blah, blah, whatever he's going to. So anyway, that was a life lesson for me. And that was like, for me, like, okay, what's going on? So for me, I have to start looking at, all right, what's going on? Like, why did I feel, I mean, I know why I did. I've been looking at that crashed-in fender for a while now and thinking, oh, I should go have it fixed. I should go have it fixed. Yeah, I don't want to pay to have it fixed, right? That's the whole point. So that's sort of what I was thinking about tonight, and I'm sure we can kick that around enough to maybe help some people out with who might be having similar type problems.
This is why it's good to bring up stuff like this, because it's a teaching moment for everybody. There's somebody who might be feeling that way, and therefore you can teach somebody else. So on the one hand, this is where I start to feel like when we talk about our character defects, sometimes we get ourselves into a place where we talk about ourselves as we're pieces of shit. And I don't think we are. I think some of this is not different from the way other people think. You might have let it take a step longer than some other people, but we're also human beings and we do stupid shit. The stupid shit we did got us to drink. So that's where the fork happened. what do you think? What was the commonality? What is a commonality that you? Or I'm backing up for a second. What makes you think that you're transactional? That's kind of a hard. That's a hard judgment you're making on yourself.
It is. I mean, I always think about, even in my relationship at home with my wife, it's like, you know, I always feel like, okay, here's, and I don't know if it's transactional so much, but it's like, I feel like there's a lot of burden on me here and I take up a lot of stuff just because of lots of things, my wife's health and stuff. And so it's like, okay, I'm looking for something in return, whether it's, you know, my wife to make sure that, you know, we have meals on the table, whatever it is. And if, and again, if I don't get that type of thing, if I feel like my wife is falling short on something like that, then I get aggravated and I get upset about it. When I was in the past, I was always transactional. Like I was always like, okay, I'm going to do this for you, but I always expected that. Like whether, you know, like growing up, If I was helping you move, then certainly when I moved, I expected that in return. Now, some people say, sure, that's just courtesy. But I really expected it, you know? Like, I expected that to happen. It wasn't just like, oh, it'd be nice if somebody could help me. And I just feel like I always, that's the whole thing with any of our character. It's like, it's an internal, it's an internal thing, right? More than external. It's how
I think it comes from somewhere.
It's how I'm thinking and feeling, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure where that came from in my upbringing, but that's how it was, right? I mean, I just, you know, I just felt that way my whole life, you know?
I have some ideas.
Yeah, sure.
You've talked about your upbringing, that you didn't have the best upbringing, right. And it feels like it might have been dog-eat-dog. So therefore, you have to get what you need. Lie, cheat, or steal, whatever can get you what you have because it's a desperate situation.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that, that's sort of like the psyche that I sort of grew up under. There's no question. But my point is, like, same thing we talk about, right? I grew up in that situation and became a person who I was. And I wasn't dishonest. Like, I wasn't stealing from people. I mean, again, some little stuff when I was younger. And some of it was the crowd I was hanging around with. It really was. But I typically wasn't a dishonest person or anything like that. And I was a good kid. I wasn't in and out of jail. It was a really tough upbringing. And it was something where I had to really find ways to figure some stuff out, right? It's like if I wanted something, I sort of had to figure out at an early age how to get it. One of the things that I talked about was like I started at like literally working at 14 years old, like literally working at a gas station down the street from me, painting like the curbs around the I was working in, you know, like illegally at the time, but just being paid cash. But like I did all that kind of stuff because I needed to find a way to get what I wanted, you know?
Right.
And so some of it served me well and some of it was problematic. So I guess, you know, there's the word altruistic out there, right? I mean, that word, that meaning that you just do something for the good of doing it. You know what I mean? It's like there is nothing attached to it. I'm trying to be more like that type of a person, and I think I am. Trust me, I think I am for the most part. I think now I do most things without thinking that I should get something in return.
Right.
But that's the whole thing about character defects. They're not there all the time, right? It's like
no.
It's not like I act this way all the time, or that I'm going to do this all the time. They're there. Right. You know, like they're there and I have to be careful with them because for this alcoholic, and this is the message if anybody's out there and you're thinking, oh, you know, I've been sober so many years. I'm starting to feel good. I don't have this problem anymore. For this alcoholic, meaning me, I have to be so diligent on that. I have to be so diligent because the first thing that goes, I say it all the time, is not, I do not wake up one day thinking that I want to drink. I don't. I wake up it's a very small, inching before you know it, you know, some things are bad. And then that's when things start going, oh, drink sounds like a good idea.
Right.
Now, having said that, just last thing, I will tell you, and again, it probably tells me that I need to do a little bit more work, that I need to reach out to my sponsor. I need to sit down, I need to talk to him, probably do some work, because I will say this. I was a big tequila drinker, and still to this day, in my brain, likes the taste of tequila, right? It's not like I don't look at tequila and like, oh my God, that's, you know, fire water. It still does. So there's some commercials on for the football games, and I was sitting there and it's like, man, that looks good. Like, and usually I wouldn't even pay attention to them. So I guess my point is there's a few things going on that I probably need to pay attention to, right? Because it is, you know, if I ignore those things, that's where I can get myself into a place where next thing I know, I'm pulling into a package store and I'm buying me a bottle of tequila.
So this is where I caution the whole, well, I've got these things, I've got to do some hard work. I also like to caution, it's continuing education.
Yeah. It is.
I think a lot of this is, instead of, I don't want you to beat yourself up too much, because I don't see you as I have an idea of what a person who is transactional looks like. I've got a person I know right in mind. I know this person is very transactional. Yeah. I think it's worth looking at, why are you transactional? And I think it comes from a place of trauma from your childhood, that it's feast or famine. Mm-hmm. And that's an echo from the past. So you are in that situation. You see, oh my gosh, I was just handed an opportunity to fix this bumper. Right. And the bumper was, I think probably you looking at the bumper and being annoyed by it is also part of a character defect.
Absolutely.
I have those things too, that I am obsessive and I can see the smallest defect. Like, I'm struggling right now. Something in my headphones sounds different to me. And as you're talking, I'm flipping through the dials and like everything is dialed the way it's supposed to. But for some reason, it doesn't sound the same to me, and it is making me mental.
Right.
And it doesn't matter, because I can sweeten this after the fact when I pull the audio. But it's those little things of, it's not perfect the way exactly I want it to be.
Yeah.
And that gets me into trouble.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of it. Here's the thing, because this, like I said, this damage on this fender has been there for a couple years at least, maybe 3 years, right? And I've always liked it. I never liked it. And then I have there's a little issue with the front fender. It has popped out, sort of lost a clip and stuff. So my car it's a 2012. I like driving old cars, because I don't like to pay a lot of money for my cars. But I don't like driving shitty looking cars, right? Mm-hmm. But I also don't want to spend a lot of money, you know. Here, and I have this fear, right? The other thing is I have this little fear. It's like, you know something? I'll go spend a couple grand fixing that car, making it look nice, and then I'll put new tires on it, because I need to do that next year. So I'll spend like $3,000 doing it, and then it'll get totaled. Right?
It'll wreckage get of the future now.
Right. It'll get totaled, right? And then that's what I think. Like, so I'm like, so I just won't fix it, right? Because that's, you know. So those are the things that go on in my head a lot of times that keep me a little bit paralyzed from doing that kind of stuff. But, you know, and this is the whole thing that's come out of this, right? Like I said, I've taken care of it. I've talked to this woman. I went to the body place that she suggested, because she knew the guy. This way she was comfortable that she was going to be treated fairly. And I said, you know, we walked through it, and he said, hey, listen, I got a guy. He goes, listen, if I do that whole fender, like if I have to repaint it all, he goes, I got a guy who come in for about $200, pull that out, clean it up for you. It won't be perfect. He said, he goes, for me, it'll be about three times that much if I do it all. I'm like, no, bring your guy in, right? $200, make it look a little bit better. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's 2012. He'll fix the front thing for me. He's like, I'll just put a screw in that. You know, so everything's going to get fixed the way I was hoping to have it fixed, right? And she's only paying for the damage that she is really responsible for. So it's all worked out. It's like I put myself through so much hell to get there. This is the point, right? It's like I put myself through so much emotional hell, right? Mm-hmm. Like doing what I did, then realizing like, oh, this is pretty shitty. And then having to fess up to it. And then again, which I haven't done yet, start really digging into it. and start trying to figure out what's going on mm-hmm. before, you know, before something worse happens.
This is a great experience that this happened to you.
Oh, I
agree. To me, it's a higher power moment that you had to go through this journey, and you had to, because you could have stopped in the parking lot and turned around and said, tell you what, second guess, second thought, I don't need all of that stuff. You didn't do that. It's this now that I'm really looking at it. You could have stopped it there. Yep. But then you had to sit in a butter tub of pain.
Yeah.
To teach you that this was a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
And this is what is great about a 12-step program in recovery of we now experience this pain because we have learned better. Maybe we don't feel that guilt the same way, or it's not as apparent to us. Now it's apparent to us and we feel that pain and it is terrible and it eats at us.
Right.
Because you went through that, you learned a lesson. And part of that lesson is there's other things I got to look at. I got to do some continuing ed. And that's okay. And it gives you this opportunity to tell the story to somebody else so they don't have to feel that pain.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about how, you know, our problems and pain can help somebody else. We always talk about
Absolutely.
It. We don't want to regret the past, but we don't want to shut the door on it because it may be able to help the next suffering alcoholic, which is why I brought it up tonight, because you had talked about there was something else you might want to share. And I thought that when I was thinking about us doing this tonight, I thought that that could be a message. And you said something very, very important, right? It's like the fact that I sat in that pain, right, and the 12-step program sort of made me, I mean, actually somewhat made me sit in that pain, the fact that because of the work I've done, has allowed me now to fix it, right? That is the beauty of it. It's to fix it and deal with it, right, rather than ignore it. Because that's the other thing I used to be really good at, ignoring those things. Because listen, if I, you know, if we talk about it all the time. If this happened in my drinking days, number one, I don't know, I probably would have been drinking, right? This was like, I don't know if this was New Year's Eve or the day before New Year's Eve. I don't remember which day it was, but, you know, I would have absolutely gone home and started drinking, and I would have felt bad about it. I would have known that it was wrong, but I would have immediately drank those worries away. And again, I don't think there would have been any doubt that I would have gone through with it. I would have sucked on some alcohol, make that pain, uncomfortableness go away, and wake up the next day and then just go ahead and do it, right? And I would have justified it thinking this woman's probably got enough money, but and I would have just done all my justifications that I used to do in life. And today I can't do that today, right? I'm accountable. And I went to the meeting and I shared when I went last Friday. I'm like, listen, I don't want to share this with you guys, but I have to, right? That's part of our program is I have to shine a light on this. And I said, I have to say this so that other guys can hear it and maybe not do it, you know? So I did. It's part of the deal. It's part of my walk. It's part of my program is that I need to continue to do this. I don't expect it to be a perfect human being, right? I don't.
You're not going to be.
So, and I'm not beating myself up. I'm not anymore. I mean, I did for a while. But here's what happened is that as soon as I, and this is the beauty of this program. As soon as I talked about it last Friday, right? That was the first time I talked about it with anybody else. Mm-hmm. As soon as I talked about it, I felt better. And as soon as I talked about it, guys would come up to me, right, afterwards, right? And then there's no criticism. Some of them were just joking with me, right? But I immediately felt better. And I'm like, okay, I'm not high. I don't have that secret anymore. Because the other saying in this one of the sayings in this program is you're only as sick as your secrets.
Yep. Right? Amen on that.
Right. And so I didn't have that secret anymore. So again, it was an opportunity for me not to have that. And then it's an opportunity for me to be able to call somebody and talk it over with somebody, right? Now they know it, right? If they're at that meeting, now they know what's going on. And I could call them up and say, hey, listen, I want to talk about this. You know, what do you think? What's going on? You know, just like we're doing tonight.
You gave somebody else an opportunity to feel better about themselves because I always feel better if somebody asks me for advice.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. And it's a reminder for you that there's still work to be done. Now, hopefully, you know your triggers. And so if the opportunity arises again, you might be able to think differently Or there, you know, what is that action step you could take if presented with a similar opportunity to go down a different path?
Right. And I think for me, there's a few things going on with me. And I know some of it is a reluctance to address some of them. And they're not, well, I shouldn't say they're not big things. I won't minimize. But so it does point out, like I said, the biggest thing it pointed out to me is that I need to do some work. And I don't know if it was here. I think we talked about it. Like
we have. Because I feel the same way. There's work I need to do, and I'm delaying
13
it.
To 14, you know, I'll be going on 14 years sober this year. It probably is the right time for me to do another set of 12 steps, right? That's mm-hmm. what it probably, that's one of the things that this is probably pointing me to, towards. I've done two since I've been sober this time. It's probably time for me to do another one. And there are a few things that I could work on. There's a few amends that are sort of hanging out there, nothing big, some old, really old time amends that have popped up. I'm like, yeah, I probably should take care of that one and that one. So it's what this probably is pointing out to me is that it's probably time for me to do that. You know, take the bull by the horns, go through the steps again, and do some work and try to dig out the root cause of whatever it is going on. Because I want to live a healthy, happy, joyous life. And I want to be, you know, I talk about it all the time. I want to be helpful and useful, right? Which is one of the things our book tells us, that if we do this program right, we'll become useful to our fellows. And that's what I want to do. I want to become useful to the people around me, so I don't have these burdens.
This reminds me of an analogy I heard recently, and I can't remember. I heard it on a podcast. I must have. And I am so sorry if I'm going to piss you off with politics, but I'm going to go down this route. Somebody had mentioned Rush Limbaugh, and Rush died a few years ago. And nobody talks about Rush anymore.
No, not at all.
Rush was at a place where he was the biggest radio name for decades, made hundreds of millions of dollars, and now he's been replaced by somebody else. And the point there is he is one of these type of entertainers who really provided cotton candy on a daily basis. Anger, cotton candy, immediate gratification. But there was nothing that had any legs to it that allows for a legacy. And it made me think, I want to take the actions that I need to take today where I have some type of legacy, that my life had stood for something, that people will talk about my brand, as we say at work, when I'm gone, of, look at the kids over there. Those kids turned out all right. They have good families. None of them are divorced. They're happy, and they can point back to me. Or I helped other people get sober. I think passing up millions and millions of dollars and Rush Limbaugh's career, it's a lot greater of a legacy when I'm in the hole that maybe I help one person get sober, because the spider webs on that change of where that branches out to other lives is so much more important. It really made me think that of, like, what is that next right thing I can do for somebody else? And I think in that way, I am feeling transactional because it does make me feel better. But where is it, even if it's just holding the door or paying for somebody's coffee or something like that, that I may not want to do, but I do that might make somebody else's life better?
This is a good point you bring up, because I am that person most of the time, right? When I'm in the, you know, if I saw this woman, and I will say this about this woman, she's probably not driving for much longer. I'll tell you that much, right? She's
elderly. Boy, do I have a mental image.
Right. She's probably not driving for much longer. But I'm the type that if this woman was in there, I would absolutely offer her my assistance, you know, to help her get anything into her cart if she couldn't reach it. Like, I would,
yeah,
I would do all those. And this is the whole point, which is why I think it was so painful for me, right? That all of a sudden, you know, I'm just taking the wrong path, right? Out of nowhere. And that's what I mean. It's sort of, and this is the problem, right? This is what we talk about. People talk about it all the time. You know, I was feeling good. The next thing I know, I pulled into a parking lot of a package store and I grabbed myself a bottle, right? You hear those stories all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is that behavior without the alcohol, right? It's like I was just tooling along my day. Everything was good. And then all of a sudden I take a wrong turn and I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yep.
So it's really important for me to identify it, to acknowledge it, right? To acknowledge it, to own it. And then the next thing is to really, really do something about it. Really try mm-hmm. to figure out what's going on, do something about it. And then, hopefully not have to do it again, ever, right? That's the key. Hopefully never have to do that again if I can. I mean, it's like I said, I'm not a perfect human being.
The great thing about this program is you had mentioned, oh, I have to do another 12 steps again. And you can almost look at that as it's self-flagellation. It's not.
Oh, no.
We're lucky to have the 12 steps, a way of life, to get through this crap. Right.
Oh, no, it's absolutely, I don't look at it like that at all. I look at it that like, oh, yeah, this will make my life better, right? I mean, I went mm-hmm. through the 12 steps, my life got better, all right? And then I decided to do them again, and when I decided to do them a second time, there was nothing bad going on. I just felt like there were some things I wanted to talk about and things. So I just think it's like, it's like everything else. It's like, all right, I'm going to take the next, whatever it is, 16, 18 week, whatever it might be, say 3 months. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to focus on that, right? That's like what it's like. I'm going to focus on that. Mm-hmm. And so that's the same thing with doing 12 steps. I'm going to take the next X amount of weeks, and I'm going to focus on going through that process. Because again, if you're out there, that's the process that works for me, right? That's the process of how yep. I get through this stuff. So I'll go into that process, and then I'll come out of that process with some more things that I maybe need to fix, but I'll feel better. I'll feel better. And the final thing I want to say, same thing with you. I follow some sober people on social media, and it's the same question. Like, we hear about it all in our meetings. People are like, oh, why do you still call yourself an alcoholic? You're not drinking. You're recovered. Like, why do you? And it's the same thing I hear from all these content providers on social media. Like, no, they're like, I am an alcoholic. Like, I'm not, it's not I was an alcoholic, you know? I am an alcoholic. And that's what I have to remember. Is that just because I haven't had a drink in many years doesn't mean that that I'm not still mm-hmm. an alcoholic who needs recovery, and that's the proof, and that's why we show up and we do this podcast. That's why I'm going out to the GSR meeting tonight. That's why I do my meetings, you know.
Yeah, and when that vote comes down tonight, of when that one old timer doesn't like the vote and he says,
I want to fight you.
Yeah. That's what I got to get you to now.
Right.
So I'll let you go.
That's it, buddy.
Well, I hope you got something out of this. We'd love to hear about your character defects. Matt at SoberFriendsPod.com. Follow us on Instagram at SoberFriendsPod.com. Steve, have a good GSR meeting.
All right,
and
Matt.
See you soon.
Talk to you later. Thanks.
Bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.